Okay, so this is a couple of years down the road. You are walking in the in this like a camp fairground almost a type of situation where
Okay, like
it's
a
like
summer camp.
no, like a carnival type of thing.
Okay.
It's like a very carnival atmosphere. It's not quite a carnival.
Like this is like these people are going town to town over the summer.
So what it is, yeah, it's a touring like rock festival,
Okay.
basically. And they stopped in LA, and basically their whole thing is a circus-like atmosphere. So they have the, carnival rides and stuff like that. You can also, throw a ball to knock over some pins and get a stuffed animal. Stuff like
Okay.
that.
Yeah.
They
But
also
it's.
have a comedy this year. And so basically what it is it's a touring festival where it's like bands, but you know how in like the 50s and the 60s they seem to have a lot of these rock songs about like monsters and stuff like that, like spooky
Yeah.
Halloween songs.
Yeah.
It's basically that. It's bands that have monster rock themes. So if you're a band and you sing about like,
Like the Misfits,
stuff, yeah, kind of stuff like that,
like horror punk type stuff.
stuff like that, stuff like, but there's like one or two of bands like that are outliers. I'm talking about like bands like that band that does that Goo Goo Muck song. When the sun comes down and the moon comes up,
Okay.
I turn into a teenage Goo Goo Muck. That kind of thing. In the 60s, there was a lot of monster rock songs. Even the Monster Mash, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Songs where they were of their time. Kind of, but for whatever reason, they're just about monsters.
A lot of occult.
There's a lot of occult imagery, yeah, in the circus. Like the balls that you throw at the pins, they all have just like these weird misshapen stars on them, and like you can't quite not prove it, but you didn't really get enough of a good look at it. But you're pretty certain that every single ball has a different set of patterns of misshapen stars on them.
As if
So.
they're all like hand crafted.
Every single one, yeah.
Okay.
There's a like a QR code on one of them. You scan it, just takes you to like a web page with like a middle finger.
Fuck yeah.
It says fuck you.
Yeah. I
You
love
kind
that.
of yeah, you laugh, you're like, hell
Yeah,
yeah.
I love that.
So so you're performing at this thing, it's called Spooky Fest.
Oh, Jesus.
So they have bands, and yeah, they will eventually play the Monster Mash, you know?
Sure.
The Monster Mash song is a song that is very divisive, very polarizing in the monster rock community. Because a lot of people view it, you know how there's like deadheads, who love the Grateful Dead and
Yeah.
they hate that song Touch of Grey because that was their hit.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. Where they go, look, this is the first song that comes to everyone's mind when you say monster rock, and it's not a good song, it's stupid. There's so much more better stuff out there. But then there's also people who go, look, like it or not, this is the song
Yeah.
as far as our genre goes. You know,
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
if you're gonna be in a big band and you're playing Duke Ellington songs, you're going to do Take the A Train. If it's a Kiss tribute act, you're going to play Rock and Roll All Night, Party Every Day. Lavender and Cream will always play Shimmer.
Without a doubt.
And that's kind of the way they look at it. It's like, yeah, like this is the song that put Monster Rock on the map and keeps it in people's minds. So maybe they'll go, yeah, I love the Monster Mash. Let me go check out Spooky Fest. And then because they're going to be playing that song. And then when they're there, they're exposed to other bands and other subgenres in the monster rock, you know, category. And, you know, it's it that's the gateway in. You know, it's so there is a lot of
it's hard to disagree debate. With. You can't,
it is,
you know.
It is. And those guys go, look, am I saying that like there's they actually have a part of the festival at, in the Los Angeles stop is they actually have a debate about this. They actually have like a thing that you
like,
can watch.
Like an actual oh yep. shit.
Yeah.
Like two educated people.
Yep. It's moderated by Glenn Danzig. And
holy shit.
And so on the one side, on the pro, or at least essentially a Monster Mash apologist, on that side is this guy. They call him Freaky Frank Pinnacle.
Yeah.
Yeah. His name is Frank Pinnacle, but like his, you know, in the, he's like, you know, he's played in several very important monster rock bands. And so, people view him as an authority on the genre.
Okay.
And certainly on the subject. And then on the other side, the, you know, the anti Monster Mash side is this, guy. People call him the Dark Lord Maven. Real name? Philip Anderson.
What the fuck? And I already don't like this guy.
So they have a debate and stuff on it, and like you poke your head and you watch it for a little bit, but after a while you're like, I don't. This is just, you know,
who
it's
wins
just
the debate?
It's too. Well, that's the thing is that. The whole thing is that they don't go, hey, this is who wins, this is who loses. It's up to the people watching to decide.
Okay.
You know? But the word you hear, like, you know, people talking about it afterward. You overhear people talking about it afterward. It seems like it was, you know, it was pretty much a stalemate where, you know, they each brought up valid points, but it's not like anyone's minds were changed, but it was fun to watch these two giants go head to head, you know?
Man, I bet. I'd love to hear him talk about it.
Yeah. So fucking, you're at a Spooky Fest and you're done with your set. You had a set. They had like a comedy. They called it Comedy Fright Zone, where it's a haunted house and every room has a different comic doing like a set. And so, and then also like something scary happens at some point. So there's also like scary stuff in the hallways in between. And so it was, you did it during the day. It was like 4 o'clock when you did it. And you kind of were like, I don't know what to do here. Danny Goodwin is doing the gig with you. He's in the room right next to you. He's like, And he gives you some advice where basically he says, like, look, the people, we don't really know what to do, but the people coming in here, they don't know what to do either. They don't know what to expect. Let's just create the experience for them.
Okay.
So he, people come in, he starts doing his act, fucking eat shit.
God damn it, Danny. What are you doing, dude?
Even though it's like an afternoon gig and it's kind of in this uncomfortable thing, the gig actually is a lot more fun than you thought it was going to be. Doing a haunted house stand-up comedy show. You really, like, as you're leaving, you're like, that really could have went way worse than it did.
It sounds like it went pretty bad for Danny.
Oh, Danny ate shit, yeah. But you were able to, you know, you're able to handle it. The scary thing that happens is that at the end of your set, you're like, all right, guys, thank you. My name's Aaron Brooks. There's a coffin next to you. And like halfway through the performance, people just kind of forget that it's even there, you know? And so it ends with like the coffin, you know, coming open and a mummy going, whoa, and like, you know, sitting up.
Okay. Why?
Because that's like the scary part. It's a haunted house. It's just haunted with comedy. That's what they say to people.
Oh. Oh, man.
They go, come to the Comedy Fright Zone where it's haunted by comedy. You must hear the pitch man say that like 100 times, and you're only there for about a half hour. There's like multiple comics covering multiple shifts. So
that fucking sucks.
So
I hear that 100 times in an hour.
Well, yeah, because part of the whole thing is there's a guy barking, you know, and he has to get people in. And so that's kind of his tagline. And it's like, you know, it's like you how you see it. It's like what Michael Park does. He just says the things over and over again because it's new people every single time. I mean, this guy's no Michael Park, but he's trying. Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're kind of like walking around Spooky Fest and you hear like a band and you're like, fuck, these guys sound pretty good. They're actually playing the Monster Mash, and you stick your head into the, the performance or whatever. And you don't really know why, but you cannot take your eyes away from their bass player.
He's just shredding.
He is holding down the low end to a degree that you have never fucking seen, or at least never really noticed, you know? So what you're seeing is like, you know, the guitar is going high, fucking bass stays low, dude.
Yeah, dude.
It stays out of the guitar's way, and the piano too. He's given the piano player freedom to not have to cover those bass chords because he's got it covered. So he's able to do some pretty extra. So it's sort of like in a very odd, very quiet, very subtle way, the bass player is like the nucleus, the one that
it's
holds.
It's like the offensive line in football terms.
Exactly.
It's not flashy, you know, but you got to have a good one to be good.
And the bass player is actually built like a fucking offensive lineman, dude. He is giant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How big is he? What are his dimensions?
He is probably like 6'4".
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know, 280 pounds of pure
Holy
muscle.
Shit. So that strap is like blown out.
Absolutely. He has like a very like the strongest, like it looked like it's made of leather, the strap that he's using now. You know what I mean? Like he's not fucking around.
Does he hold it up high? Does he carry it high against his chest? Is he one of those that plays it way up here?
So
is that what he does?
No. Well, so what it is he actually can hold it at a sub. The reason that people do that is that it's a little bit easier for a lot of people to play that way. However, this guy, his hands are so big that he can hold that bass however he, you know. Yeah. And like I said,
is it a four string?
It's a four string.
Okay.
Yeah.
What
this
kind
guy,
of guitar is
he
it?
Doesn't, this guy's thing is like, look, you guys want to play a five string. That's fine. Six string. Okay. Honestly, if you want to get even to like the extended range basses and start playing eight strings, 12 strings, do whatever you want. But all I've ever needed is my four friends here. E, A, D, and G. His name is Thomas Bennett Player.
Thomas Bennett what?
Player.
Player?
Yeah. His stage name is TB Player.
Tuberculosis.
So you watch, and you're just like, you don't even remember the name of the band because you're just like so fixed on this bass player. And like I said, TB. And nothing too crazy, like I said, but every once in a while, he'll throw a lick in to show that, oh, if I wanted to, I could like, you know.
Yeah, really let it rip.
I could absolutely ruin this show with like a bunch of crazy bass shit that, you know, no one wants to hear. Not in that context, at least. Monster Rock isn't, you know, known for its intricate bass lines. Not yet, at least. He's looking to change that. But you got to do baby steps, I guess. This is what you think to yourself.
Yeah, I have this whole conversation in my head about the state of fucking Monster Rock and how this guy is pushing the art form forward via the bass guitar.
Yeah.
TB player.
So you drive home and you turn on the radio and it's like, this is W LANALAX, Lanalax Radio. DJ, this is DJ Jason Light checking in. And we're going to go ahead and play some Chili Peppers for you. Hey, my friends, help me give it away. Boom, boom, bow, bow, bow. And you're listening and you're really listening to that fucking bass line. And you're thinking to yourself, it's one of the all-time great bass lines that you've ever heard. Bow, 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 bow. Leaves, it's simple, but it's memorable, leaves room for improvisation, you know? After that song,
great bass line.
That song goes right into the song Sledgehammer by Peter Gabriel, or is that
Robert Palmer?
It doesn't matter, but it's the song Sledgehammer.
I always got those two guys confused. Sorry.
Really? That's funny.
Yeah, I don't know why. It's just how it is in my brain.
It's all good. You know? DJ Jason Light is like, and now Sledgehammer. I forget who it's by. Another all-time great bass line. And before you know it, you don't even like realize you're doing it until you've like parked and you kind of go, what the fuck, where am I? And you look up and you're in front of a Guitar Center and you just go, fuck it. You get out of your car, you walk right in there and you purchase your very first electric bass guitar. You feel inspired by like the giants of bass, you know?
It's not my very first electric bass guitar.
What's your first in a long time?
First in a long time.
Yeah. And you kind of think to yourself, like, as you purchase this this bass, as you slide that credit card over.
Man, what am I having, like, a midlife crisis?
No, you're just like, so what it is I wouldn't call it a midlife crisis. You're just thinking to yourself, there are other ways to express myself. And the bass is just, it's just been, you've just been noticing it everywhere lately. You've been noticing like, you know, listening to classical music, even you'll be listening for the upright bass and you'll be like, oh, you know, wonderful. Like you try to sound smart when you listen to it.
Yeah.
So you say things like, well, the arpeggios of the bass are simply a feast for the ears. And people are like, whoa, they actually are impressed, but you know, you're going to get called out one day.
Yeah. You're playing with fire.
Yeah. For now you're getting away with it.
Well, that's good.
So you've just been getting super, super into the bass. And so you purchase it almost not necessarily on a whim, but more like listening to like Give It Away and then Sledgehammer right one after the other is a straw that broke that fucking camel's back.
God damn.
And that
camel
died.
Oh, of course it did. Of course you broke its back.
So you get a 4-string bass. You think about a 5, but you're like, you know what? I'm just going to stick to the 4.
Yeah.
And you purchase it and you actually think about your bass playing days of your youth, you know? So you get this bass. It's jet black. It's actually like the darkest bass guitar that you've ever seen in your fucking life. That's what drew your eye to it. And, you know, it's got pickups. The pickups are in the shape of those same misshapen stars. So you bring it home and you start putting in the work, dude.
Oh man, I don't like this.
You sit down and you just start like, you do a combination of you just playing just to play, fuck it, whatever. You basically have a 3 prong strategy on learning the bass. One of them is called the just fuck around initiative. The just fuck around initiative. And what that is you're just sitting, you're watching TV and you're just playing whatever's coming to mind. It doesn't matter what it is. No one can hear it but you.
Yeah.
You even plug it in. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Number 2, of your three-pronged plan is, you call it undercover mode. Undercover mode is you just learning, you know, different songs that you like.
Undercover. Okay.
Yeah. So it's it does require some, you know, formal study a little bit, but not in, in kind of a more fun way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because prong three is like the serious stuff. I'm talking like you're learning, like you're studying music theory. You're learning to read music. You're starting to like also do some pretty interesting, you're trying to like experiment with some interesting, you know, techniques too.
Okay.
And after a while, like you kind of realize like your like facial hair has gotten like really long.
No,
you haven't shaved or anything like that.
I don't want to be that bass player. No.
You got like really, really like a very long beard now. And your playing is starting to get good. And you didn't even like realize it. You just went to, there was like this band that was like, hey, we're auditioning a bass player. You know, we need some of that fat bottom end. And so you're like, huh. You see that ad, you go and try out, and the band is this group. They do like jazz fusion, but like also like speed metal every once in a while, like as a joke.
Jesus Christ.
Mostly jazz fusion, but every once in a while they start shredding for no reason. And so they're called Thunder Horse. So you go to try out for Thunder Horse and you just fucking let it loose, dude. You don't even ask what key they're in. You just fucking go. And by the end of it, like you realize you're the only one playing and everyone's just kind of like staring at you.
I'm just ripping up on bass that whole
ripping
time.
It up. Yeah. And they're like, man, you are too good for this band.
Jesus Christ.
They actually like break up because of this.
Come on.
So you start getting really good and you're like, you go to like Guitar Center to buy like effects pedals and stuff like that. And every time you go and start playing, people, it's doesn't happen right away, but eventually you will look up and see that there's just a crowd in that Guitar Center around you. People start calling you the Bass Lord. And that beard is fucking long and thick. So you're sitting at home one night and you're just doing prong number one. You're just fucking around, you know? What you're doing is you're playing the Seinfeld like theme song.
Yeah, yeah.
A slap bass classic. You're just playing that in like every key. So you start off obviously in E, F, and you kind of like move up. You're just practicing it.
Okay. Just noodling around on the Seinfeld theme.
And you start like, you finally get all the way up the neck to E flat. Fret number 11. And when you get to fret number 12, E, an octave higher, when you complete the Seinfeld theme song in every single key, suddenly there's like this flash of like bright light.
Yeah.
A portal opens in your living room.
Yeah.
But you can't see through it. It's just like weird orange, like energy kind of in there.
Sure.
And then you hear like Aaron Brooks. It's like a robot voice.
Yeah.
There you go. Do you have 5 minutes to chat? And that portal is like glowing, dude.
I say this is fucking terrifying. Can we make it quick? Because this is the most insane thing that's ever happened to anyone.
So the robot goes on to tell you that after you figured out the right frequency or whatever, you've been able to open this portal. And they're like, goes on to explain that it's a robot, it works for space aliens, and that it's kind of been sent as a on kind of on their behalf. And they're like, yeah, the aliens, they've been waiting for this, and you're the first one to do it. You've answered the call of the universe.
What the fuck? What does that even mean?
The energy kind of like disappears, and then
Good.
there's like a weird robot standing on the side of the portal.
No, I
And
didn't fucking say, like, come into my house.
then he goes, "I will come in your house."
No. What the fuck?
And then it's
Why?
like, I guess it just has like selective hearing or something. I don't know.
It's a fucking robot in my house. An adult-sized robot in my house.
Yeah, and it looks like one of those 1950s ass robots.
Yeah, like powered by pneumatics and shit.
Yeah,
Like,
absolutely. And it goes, "Aaron, you are the first human being to play the Seinfeld theme in every key. You have proven yourself worthy to meet my maker, the great alien race of the Nebulon region."
the great alien race of the Nebulon region.
"I come in the name of the Martians. Will you meet with them? Will you be the emissary of Earth?"
What do
There's
you
like a
want me
there,
to?
there there's a bunch of like lights on his chest, and it just starts like flashing in different things.
This sucks.
Well,
I hate this guy so much.
no, he's being polite.
Yeah, but he sucks, Pat.
What do you mean?
He's a robot who can't go more than four syllables without adjusting his posture. It's loud and it's awkward and obnoxious. He also just came through a fucking portal in my living room. Like, what does he want me to do? He wants me to meet with who am I meeting with? Where am I meeting them?
He goes on to
What do they
explain
want
that
from me?
basically, Martians, like Mars, used to have like intelligent life, but millions of years ago, they were like forced off planet by a force that they don't even remember. That's how long ago it was. And the Martians have just been kind of out and about ever since. And they want to come back home.
They
And
want to come back to Earth.
they want to come back to Mars.
Oh, okay, to
Yeah.
Mars. Well, then go to fucking Mars. What's
And then
stopping? I'm not stopping you. Why do you need me?
she goes,
I'm
"You
a
are,"
bass player.
she goes, "You are the bass lord." You look down, and suddenly, like, your beard is even more full and even more thick than it was
Ugh.
before. You're wearing like all leather. Like, you look fucking badass, dude. There's another like flash of like a bright light. And like, you kind of like, you wake up and you're in like clearly like a scientific, sterile environment, like a lab or something. And standing in front of you are like these aliens. They are the Martians, I guess. And so they're kind of interesting looking, where they kind of look like a plunger, where like this it, like the plunge stuff is on the actual plunger is on the bottom, obviously, and their body is like a stick, and they have like eyes that like float off of off of the stick somehow. You know what I mean? Like in the cartoon.
Yeah.
And they don't have like arms, but they have telekinesis and they just like hop everywhere. And also they have like a instead of like a mouth, they just communicate like telepathically, you know? And the one Martian in front of you goes, "Oh," you hear this in your head, goes,
God,
"Oh, Aaron. Oh, I'm Tony Italiano. I'm in charge of the Martians."
"Hi, Tony."
He goes, "Oh, forget about it." He goes, "Oh, you played Seinfeld. Oh, that music." He goes, "Oh, but you know, they didn't music nowadays. You know what I like? I like Frank Sinatra." A meatball sub like floats in, obviously from telekinesis, and just gets near him, and he doesn't have a mouth, but somehow he fucking eats that meatball sub, dude. It just disappears. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
You imagine that. He goes, "Oh, we transform it into mental energy."
I go, "Was it good? Can you taste things the way I can taste things? Like, do we have the same point of reference in that regard?"
He goes, This is me ma's recipe from the old country. He goes, "I'll make you some."
This Italian plunger-shaped alien is going to make me a meatball sandwich.
It just floats in. He goes, "It's telekinesis. Oh." He goes, "You want any gabagool?"
"No, no, thank you. I'm okay with this. I appreciate the sandwich will be enough."
The sandwich like floats and just lands. It falls and lands perfect. Like you kind of like cup your hands together. You know what I mean? Almost like you're receiving like water from a holy shrine. You cup your hands. The meatball sub lands ever so softly in those hot little hands of yours.
Ugh.
You take a bite. And it is the best meatball sub you've ever had in your fucking life.
All right. Okay.
He looks at you. He goes, "Fresh garlic."
Yeah. I'm not normally like a meatball sub guy, contrary to popular belief. But yeah, you give me my new favorite meatball sub, I would enjoy that.
And he looks at you and he goes, "Aaron, we've got a little bit of a situation."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, we just want to go back to Mars." And he goes, "But we need a representative on Earth." And he goes on to ask you to be the Martian emissary for Tony Italiano.
Why? Number one, why me? And number two, what do I have to do?
He goes, "What did you say?"
I said, "I'm curious. Why are you choosing me to do this? I'm not a remarkable person in any way."
Because then he like looks at you, and he goes, "Aaron, first of all, try some cheese balls. Like, there's cheese balls floating.
I just had a whole meatball sandwich.
It just lands
still
on the table.
Relishing. I don't want to eat a bunch of cheese balls right now. I just had an entire meatball sandwich. I don't want cheese balls."
He goes, "Second of all, we've been waiting millions of years for someone to play the right notes to open that portal."
Sure. He goes on to that show's been around for fucking 40 years now, or however long it's been.
Right, but everybody,
like that show, has somebody within that time frame has to have played the Seinfeld theme up an entire octave the whole way.
Not the way you did.
God damn it, Pat. You fucking kidding me?
And so he's like, he goes on to say that like it's been millions of years, like they've been just kind of lost in the galaxy.
Well,
so like
then,
this,
yeah, I'll be your fucking emissary. What do you want me to do? What do you need me to do?
I couldn't
willfully say no if I am the only hope of these people
because
of this dumb fucking Seinfeld baseline.
He kind of like looks around and he goes,
"What a fucking work."
He goes, "Oh, I can't believe I get to say this." And he turns to you and he goes, "Take me to your leader." Then he goes, hey, Tone, did you hear me? I said, "Take me to your leader." Like in the movies?
No. No. Absolutely no.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? You mean if I fucking live in LA, you want me to go to Washington, D.C. to introduce fucking Joe Biden to the Martians?
He goes, yeah, we got the portal. Remember?
I'm not doing that. I'm not, because that is, if you just show up at the White House with a bunch of fucking Martians, so what do you think is going to happen to me? They're going to kill me.
He goes,
I'm not doing that.
He goes, you don't even want to think about it? Maybe come up with a plan?
No. Here's a plan. You go to whitehouse.gov and fucking book a tour. That's what you do. That's how you, if you want to get into the White House, that's how, there. You did it. You don't even need me to do it. You need a fucking stable internet connection.
Yeah. And so he's like, he kind of looks at you and he goes, thank you, and you've been very kind.
Thank you, and I appreciate the sub.
He, it's kind of hard to explain, but basically it's almost like a telekinetic, you feel like the grip of a telekinetic hand on your hand shaking you. And when it pulls away, like there's like $100 bill in your fucking palm.
Jesus Christ.
He goes, you earned that.
Oh, thank you, Tony. You're a kind man.
He gets
out. The fuck out of there. I don't want to be in this fucking UFO anymore, Pat.
Yeah. So you step back through, back through the portal, back to your, back to your living room. The bass is still on. It's actually like ringing with like feedback. Oh, it has been for like several hours. Your neighbors are kind of pissed.
Yeah, I don't blame them. Don't blame them.
You go to sleep. You dream of a howling void.
Great.
You wake up the next day and you kind of stretch and you're like, man, you're looking forward to a day of bass playing. You pick up your phone. You go on Reddit and it's just people being like, holy shit, are you seeing this? And you're like, what? And you look at like, you click and you look at the news and it's like, Martians murder president, comma. Great.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Conquer Earth after taking tour of White House. And basically you're like, what? And then all these different, there's different conflicting news reports coming out. But essentially the way that it settles is the Martians were like really insulted that you didn't try to help, like you didn't like help them really. And so
told them where to go and what to do and they succeeded.
And so they booked the tour. And then when they asked like, oh, like, well, when do we, they're like, when do we get to like talk to like the guys in charge, the president? When do we get to talk to them? They're like, what are you talking about? You just booked a tour.
I never promised that.
That's all this is. And they got so
promised them that
they got so enraged that they just conquered the planet effortlessly.
I never promised them that. It's not my fault that they cannot comprehend. I said you will go to the White House. That's how you get to the White House. I never said they were going to fucking meet Joe Biden. I told them no.
The Martians, they go around to like a restaurant to restaurant, any restaurant that serves meatballs. They do a taste test and out of 10. And if you get anything below a 9.3, you're executed on television.
Jesus Christ. That's not going to leave a lot of restaurants left.
No.
Every Subway is gone. Every.
Yeah.
You know, all those places.
After they, like I said, the Earth, capitulated pretty instantaneously. Just their level of technology is just a level that. Yeah, that we can't understand. And so to the point where it's almost like magic. And so Tony Italiano, he makes like a an address to the entire world. And he goes,
don't fucking do it.
He goes, oh, don't ladies and gentlemen, we are now the rulers of Oith. And it's all thanks.
No, fuck you.
To the shitty attitude. Of
fuck
Aaron
you.
Brooks, and he shows a photo of you.
Fuck
and
you.
It's a photo of you walking out. I guess you like just kind of weren't really thinking, and you walked out to your car to grab something, and you were just, the only thing you're wearing were white boxers with red hearts on them, and it's just a photo of you, and you're kind of going like, oh, like stop, like you're putting like a hand up. You know that they're taking a picture of you, and so they do that, and then they go on to talk about how they're going to enslave the entire human race. You don't experience that though, because a bunch of like a mob of angry people come to your house and they just beat the shit out of you.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Come on.
They rip that gigantic bass player beard out of your no. like out by the fucking like root or whatever, and they make you choke on it as they so stomp you to death.
Jesus Christ, man.
And there is still marinara sauce in that fucking beard. So you taste a little bit of that meatball sub as you die.
Jesus Christ.
The base lord.